All right, here we are. This is the second and final installment in this very exciting a series on Tisha B'Av. Very excited to have you, Rabbi. I don't want to take any more of your time. Please, love you to kick us off, and we look forward to learning.
My pleasure. Thank you so much for having me today. Baruch haba to everybody. And for those who were in our last series, this is repetitive, but just as a brief hakdama, a brief introduction, we are going through the teshuvot of the great Sefaradi Chachamim from the 16th century. In addition, just by way of introduction, I'm Yosef Zarnigyan, rabbi at Kal Kadosh Mikveh Yisrael, the Spanish and Portuguese synagogue here in Philadelphia. And part of why we're going to be learning the Teshuvot of the 16th century Chachamim is in part because of how valuable the Teshuvot were in, and how valuable they continue to be in the development of contemporary halakha, but also because these are, in my opinion, very underrated and understudied Chachamim. Last week, we had studied two Teshuvot, one from the renowned Maharashtam, Rabbi Shmuel de Modena of Salonika, and we also learned a short Teshuvah by Rabbi Yaakov Berab, who is the teacher of the Chacham that we'll be studying today, Rabbi Moshe Mitrani. The last point of review from last class that we had was with regard to the significance of the Teshuvah that we studied. We had studied a lengthy Teshuvah of Maharashtam regarding the usage of non-Jewish names, particularly by those who were converts, descendants of the conversos from Portugal. It was significant in a number of regards, but particularly because of the identity crisis that many of those Jews had, adopting new names and reverting back to some of the old practices that conversos had, such as having non-Jewish names. And Maharashtam addressed a very, very sensitive issue, which is that of Jewish identity. In addition to the ramifications in halakha regarding Jewish identity, conversion, et cetera, the issue of names also bears a very critical point in how we identify ourselves, not only among one another as Jews, but also to the outside world. And so, what we want to focus on today is also relevant to the idea of Jewish identity, namely, how do we address Jews of other backgrounds? So, what are we discussing here? Rabbi Moshe Mitrani discusses the topic of marriage to Karaites. A little bit about Rabbi Moshe Mitrani. He was a 16th century Chacham who lived in Safed, Safed, Eretz Yisrael. He's not a lightweight. He is no lightweight. Harav Mitrani was a fellow colleague on the Beit HaDin of Rabbi Yosef Karo, the author of the Shulchan Aruch, the famous code of Jewish law. He and Maran, Rabbi Yosef Karo, were not only very, very dear colleagues with one another, they were not only Havitot and students of the previous Chacham that we studied, Rabbi Yaakov Berab, and not only were they among the handful of Musmachim, those who received what was considered by some to be authentic semicha, bona fide semicha from Rabbi Yaakov Berab, but they were also involved in a number of very, very interesting discussions in halakha, one of which is the famous discussion of processed foods, processed produce in Eretz Yisrael that was processed by a non-Jew, if that is obligated in terumot and maaserot nowadays. That was a big controversy. They were also involved in an interesting dispute regarding diplomatic exceptions for Chukat Nochri, whether various people are able to dress or appear as non-Jews to shave with razors. many other such topics. Very, very interesting discussions between disputes between the two of them, but they nonetheless were dear colleagues of one another. So the following teshuvah is, we'll dive right into it. It addresses the topic of marrying into Karaites. Are we allowed to marry Karaites? And more specifically, are Karaites even allowed to marry among themselves? It's an interesting discussion. Towards the end of the teshuvah, we'll discuss why this is relevant for our purposes nowadays. But we're going to analyze Rabbi Mitrani's method of Pesikat Halakha, and basically we'll be seeing how he arrives at the conclusion that he arrives at. Now, the following portion was addressed to him by an unnamed Chacham. We're not sure who it is exactly. And he says, Natati alibi lidrosh v'lakor v'chokhmat megillah achat meyuchedet al heter ha-sadokim labo v'kahal. The questioner, the inquirer, is saying, I became very curious about inquiring whether the Sadokim, these are of course the spiritual forefathers of the Karaites, the sectarian group among Jews who rejected the Torah shebe'alpeh, the jurisprudence of our Chachamim with regard to interpreting and practicing the Mitzvot. According to some reports, they were also known to reject the concept of Olam Haba. They also did not accept that concept. So, miyuchesed le'ish dat utfuna gibor chacham ba'oz, geber chacham ba'oz. This question is attributed to somebody who is a wise and understanding Talmid Chacham. He's mighty and renowned in his own right. And this is basically his hinting of his question to me in the following manner. Ube omdi al seter devareya umtok mileha masati ba dvarim arukim ubilti mochukim inyan haninse etzlo. And he says, as I tried to decipher his question to me about marrying into the Karaite community, and we're going to see what sort of hints he was dropping. Right, it wasn't just some innocent question. There was also some ulterior motive behind the question. He says, I wasn't so satisfied with some of the justifications that this rabbi tried to prove in order to marry into the Karaite community. He says, even though I love this man, ha'emet areva yoter, truth to me is even more precious. Right? That's this portion here. Now, he says, I want to inform him of the difficulties in his proposition, so that he can understand properly this subject. Because a phrase borrowed from the Talmud, the owner of a home knows his kitchenware. We're in familiar territory, and so he should be familiar with the arguments that I'm going to present to him in the halakha. This is a phrase borrowed from Yechezkel, and in the chambers of his smooth stone, literally translated, figuratively that means his inner chambers, and he recognizes inner chambers more so than others. Meaning, I'm going to give him the following reasoning in halakha, and that should also answer his ulterior motives in raising this question to me. Now, he says, so what's the question over here? Vehine befetach dvarav, the opening remarks that he made, he asked, Kim banu lefoslam mishum edei haget shehem pesulim min haTorah, if you want to say that you can't marry the Karaites because of the witnesses of their gitin, the Karaites also have a concept of divorce, but they don't do it in the manner in which is considered kasher by our standards. She'ovrim al kama kritot b'chol yom. They violate various transgressions that are iksur karet, very serious transgressions that would make them invalid witnesses to sign on a divorce. Af le kedushin en kan edut. Maybe by that same logic, you should say their marriages are also not good, because all of their witnesses, if you're going to say all of their witnesses are not good for the divorces, then all of their witnesses should also be invalid for marital purposes. And therefore, there's no marriage to begin with. This is an explicit Gemara in Masechet Kiddush, in Masechet Sanhedrin, which states that a person who is pasul from Mina Torah is considered an invalid witness. We don't reckon his witness for Kiddushin, for marriage. But upon second glance, it would appear that they're actually not invalid. Because with regard to testimony and being considered valid witness, I guess you could say a notary of sorts, right? To notarize a document, you're not considered, according to Halakha, an invalid witness unless you violate a crime, a prohibition of the Torah, with deliberate intent. Kedamrenan hatam, like the Gemara in Bava Mesia refers to a case with regard to the prohibition of lotachmod, not coveting. Lotachmod leinsheh, a court for most people in the perception of the common person, bela deme mashmalehu. This implies without money. What does that mean, without money? So the Gemara over there is referring to something of the like of lo tachmod. Lo tachmod requires specific criteria to be met in order to violate it. The Gemara's assumption is most people assume you only violate that prohibition, the 10th commandment in the Aseret HaDibrot, by taking something without paying. So, for example, you covet your friend's Mercedes, you covet his coat or his watch. So you take the Mercedes or you take the coat or you take the watch and you don't pay for it. So that's when you violate the crime. But what if you just covet something in your heart? Right? Ibn Ezra on that pasuk, by the way, he gives an example of somebody who, let's say, really, really covets another person's wife. He absolutely is infatuated with this married woman. So that's also prohibited. You don't violate the crime just by stealing the wife. If you wish that this individual does not have the object that is being coveted, you're also in violation. But most people don't know that. So if they don't know that, they're not considered pasul la'edut. They're not considered invalid witnesses. It's only when they are aware of a crime's nature, even if it's mistaken, and then they violate it, that they would be considered invalid witnesses. And also he gives this rabbi also gives another case of these two grave diggers that buried a deceased person on Yom Tov, first day of Yom Tov, which is not allowed. Chachamim permitted violating second day Yom Tov to bury a deceased person, but not the first day. But they think they're doing a mitzvah by burying this deceased. So the Gemara over there says they're not considered invalid witnesses because they thought they were doing a mitzvah. And these Karaites, they're considered like, they don't know any better. This is a borrowed phrase from Harambam. Maimonides writes in Yilchot Mamrim that Karaites nowadays fall under the category of people who are simply following in the ways of their ancestors. They don't know any better. They're doing what their parents did. This is what we do. But they're not doing what they do just because they want to stick it to the Parushim, to the Rabbinites, the Jews who follow the tradition of Achachamim. If that's the case, Ad alma de b'torat egutem. Based upon our discussion until now, it would seem that they do fall under the category of being valid witnesses. And so it would appear that if somebody marries in their presence, then their marriage would seem to be valid, according at least on the level of the Torah. And consequently, their divorces would also fall under the same category. Now, this is a problem. Because, and Rabbi Moshe Mitrani explains to us why this is. He says, the flaw in the argument that was raised is not clear to me, Rabbi Mitrani says. The Shani Shoget, a case where somebody is mistaken, he does something by accident, is different. The Milta Hada Belav de la Tachmod, the Gemara's case of coveting something, and you think that you only violate something by coveting, by stealing it, right? He says that's not the same as somebody who violates something mistakenly over and over again. In other words, a person who believes I only covet by stealing, that's a one-time thing. You don't covet every second of your life. You might covet something for 1 second or 2 seconds, or it's regarding one particular item. But the Karaites, they're mistakenly violating an entire set of mitzvot, a massive set of mitzvot on a regular basis. It's habitual. So he says that the two cases are incomparable to one another for that reason. Di amar shnehem shavim. For if you say the two of them are the same, haris sidukim kesherim la'edud afilu midrabanan. Because if you say that the two of them are the same, then the Karaites should be fully kosher witnesses, just like any good observant Jew. He says, because the Gemara's case of the Jew who doesn't know any better, and he thinks you violate the prohibition of coveting, lo tachmod, by stealing, the Gemara over there says that person is a valid witness if he doesn't steal, even on the rabbinic level. He's a fully kosher witness. So you can't say that because, as Rabbi Mitrani will show, there are numerous sources where the Chachamim and the Talmud disqualify the Karaites as witnesses on the rabbinic level. Right? And he says, V'chol sheken mehanhu kevurayeh. So all the more so regarding the case of the grave diggers, where these grave diggers, in the case the Gemara brought, thought that they were doing a mitzvah, and the Talmud said they're still considered kosher witnesses. So that's also a one-time thing. You're not burying people on Yom Tov every day. This is as opposed to somebody who violates prohibitions, even under mistaken pretenses, all the time. And he says, he brings further proof. The od, he says, furthermore, the peshita, the han hesedokin lav shogegin mikre. It's obvious to me that the Karaites nowadays cannot be considered as people who don't know any better. Ela mezidim ufsulim edoraita. They're considered acting in the way they do deliberately, and they're completely invalid in their testimony. Afilu b'nei b'neihem sheidichu otam avotam. Even their descendants that were misled by their ancestors. Deha motarin ve'omdim hen. For they act freely and stand brazenly in what they do. Deyad ed atumi zera Yisrael. Because they know that they're of Jewish stock. Umachkeshim betorash be'alteh. And they still violate the tradition of the Chachamim in their interpretation of the mitzvot. Ve'ovrim kama averot bechol yom, and they violate, like we said, many prohibitions daily. Umgalim panim b'Torah, umeizim pinehem, and many of them even do so just to spite and to, be a thorn in the side of the Chachamim and of the rabbinic Jews. Keneged Chachmei Ador, opposing the leaders of the Jewish people. So this is a totally different category. Based on what? Based on the reality. The Karaites don't fit the description of people who are innocent and don't know any better. Okay. So I'm going to skip just a tiny bit. Again, like last time in our last series, we we had gone through very lengthy teshuvot because these chachamim had written very lengthy teshuvot. And so for the purposes of, you know, just saving some time, we will jump a little ahead. I apologize, one moment. Now, Umashikatav, with regard to what Harambam writes, Umashikatav de Behedya Katav Haravza, that which the rabbi is Maimonides. With regard to what Maimonides writes explicitly in Ilchot Avadim, he writes in the laws of servants in his Mishneh Torah, what does he say? Shasidukim is manazeh edutam edut. He says, one second. Maimonides writes explicitly that the Karaites are able to give valid testimony. And so their marriages, their divorces should all be valid. And if their marriages are all valid and the divorces are all valid, then you don't have to worry about marrying into them, because the children of the Karaites and their descendants would consequently not be mamzerim, right? In case I didn't spell it out earlier, just for the sake of clarity, the whole notion, the whole premise that this question rests on is whether or not you can marry the Karaites, or if they can even marry themselves, because they may all be mamzerim, children of stock or relationships, families that are in biblically prohibited relationships that carry an isur karet. So, for example, a child born to a married woman from another man, a child born out of incest, et cetera, et cetera. So, la katav ze la behedya v'la michlala. He says that the Maimonides actually never said this, he did not say so explicitly, nor did he even state it in general terms. He says, the case that Maimonides discusses is a case where you have one Karaite and one Jew, rabbinic Jew, that are attesting to something together. Aval stam kuti de lav haverhu pasula edut, afil beseruf. He says that Maimonides is talking about kuti echad and chaver echad. So you have within the Karaites people who are called chaverim. A chaver is basically a Karaite, but a Karaite in name only. He's afraid. He doesn't want to involve himself in controversy or in questionable status. So he may have certain Karaite beliefs, but in practice, he practices the Torah. He practices the mitzvot according to rabbinic tradition, according to the Chachamim. So he's considered a haver. Such a person, according to Harambam, may serve as a valid witness alongside an observant Jew. But he cannot serve alongside another Sadoki, along another Karaite. That's not the case Maimonides is talking about. And if that's not the case Maimonides is talking about, then you cannot say that the signatures on the divorces of Karaites would be valid, because no observant Jew is signing on to their divorces. No observant Jew is signing on to their marriages. That's actually partially true. The second thing I said is partially true, but we'll get to that later. So he says, "Avastam kuti de lav haverhu pasula idut." But if you're dealing with just the average Karaite, who is not a chaver, he doesn't follow in the ways of the Chachamim, he's certainly completely excluded from being a valid witness, even if you have another kosher witness with him. Usiduki de kavate de inyan pisul. But he says to the contrary, if two Karaites were to be witnesses onto a matter, then not only do the rabbis not sanction that testimony, even on the level of the Torah, the testimony does not serve any validity. And with regard to what we mean when we say chaver, he says that has to do with somebody who's genetically Karaite, ethnically Karaite, he's from the community, but he acts in the ways of the rabbis. Because if this is not the case, then he's not a chaver. This is implied from the following passage that the Gemara and Nidah talks about. The Kamara Kuti chaver ustuki. This the Gemara over there is discussing a case with regard to a two Karaites who are testifying with regard to the status of a woman being a Nida, and as we'll see in a little bit, the Talmud actually recognizes the testimony of Karaites with regard to Nida. Why is that? Because that was one of the things, that was one of the categories of Mitzvot that the Karaites actually observed. And in another place, the Gemara says they actually observed it more scrupulously than the Rabbinites did, than did, you know, the Jews from our tradition. So over there, you can rely on the testimony. That's an exception to the rule. Why is that? Even if you have two Karaite witnesses, the Gemara says they're valid. Why? Because with regard to the testimony of the color of blood, you don't really require two witnesses. You only require a single witness. So he says that case is also incomparable. You can't compare it to the case of divorce or marriage, where you need to have two kosher witnesses. By kosher witnesses, we're referring to people who are not in brazen and open violation of the Torah and its commandments. Okay. So, up until now, I'm going to skip a little bit. And up until now, we basically were given proposals for why these Karaite marriages should be considered valid. And Rabbi Mitrani is now rejecting all of them. He's rejecting all these arguments one after another, like a very good attorney. Before I move on, just want to stop midway. If there are any questions, is there anything that's unclear? Okay. All right. So he says further, Ot katab zap, vizel shono. He is now quoting further into the inquirer's question. And he says, if you want to say that the Karaites may be unfit for us to marry, mishum she'ena bekiim betofse gitin, because they are not experts in tofse gitin. What's tofse gitin? Every bill of divorce has a tofes and a toref. The tofes is considered, literally it means the tangible item, the substance. So the substance of the get, of the bill of divorce, contains all of the language necessary to spell out that husband X would like to divorce wife Y. That's basically it. Everything else that's left blank include the location of where the divorce is being written and signed, the names of the husband and the wife, nicknames, et cetera, et cetera. So everybody knows how to write names. Everybody knows how to write locations. Not everybody knows how to write the intricate language that is needed for a bill of divorce to be a full-fledged bill of divorce. So if you want to say that these Karaites don't know how to write their gittin, well, kol shenichtav haget al davar talush. Anything which is written on a dismembered or a mobile item, something that you can move, it's mobile. V'hiskir shem ish hamgaresh v'shem ha'isha, and which also mentions the man that is divorcing and the woman that's being divorced. V'natnulan, it's given to her v'edim with witnesses. Harizeh get kasher min haTorah. This is considered a valid divorce from the Torah. Why is this a good argument? Because if you assume that the Karaites practice this, then that means if there are mamzerim, the mamzerim are not mamzerim on the level of the Torah. They would be rabbinic mamzerim. And we're not even sure if these individuals that Jews may marry are mamzerim. They're safek mamzerim. They may be, they may not be. So regarding a rabbinic doubt, we usually lean leniently, and therefore they should be perfectly fine to marry, unless you can prove for sure that this person was a mamzer. So ad alma, until the point where the inquirer says, demina Torah megureshet, kol sheyizkir shemo shma. Afilu lo katav minan gerushin ela krak kedichtiv mehanhe. Even if you want to spell out the language of the divorce by only using verses from the Torah, Pesukim, the Karaites often very do this, even in their prayer books. If any of you have ever seen a Karaite Sidur, a prayer book, there's very little original language. I mean, you have some, you do have a little. But very often, they're so loyal to the text of the Tanakh that they just copy and paste Pesukim. So even if you want to say that the whole bill of divorce is just verses that have to do with Pesukim that have to do with divorce, so long as the man is listed, the woman's listed, and it's mobile, you can give it to the wife, it should be fine on the level of the Torah. So Rabbi Mitran also rejects this. He rejects this argument. he's a little funny. He says, "Va'ani Omer, I say, delgabe sadokim lav mitazutraehi sheyubikin b'ktivat b'ktiva al devar talush." He says it's not a small matter that you assume that they would write it on something that's a mobile object. Don't assume that. Maybe they're not smart enough to think of that. They may write the bill of divorce on something that is attached to the ground. You never know. Maybe the husband decided to divorce his wife by chiseling it onto the house. Or maybe he decided to inscribe it in a tree or something along those lines. Nor are you allowed to assume Haskarat Shemot, that they're experts in the mentioning of names, untina ba'edim, and it's giving, it's delivery with witnesses. Kol sheken de'ika mile aharinat uva midorata bar mehan. All the more so, are we not going to assume that their bills of divorce are valid, because there are many other factors that warrant a bill of divorce to be valid, to be kasher, aside from the ones that this rabbi had mentioned. For example, it must be by the will of the husband. Rabbi Mitrani says it must be birsono. If the husband does not give the bill of divorce willingly, then the get is invalid. It must also be v'she'aya davar hakoret beno vena. It must be an unconditional get. What does that mean? Well, let's say a person divorces his wife, but says, "I'm only divorcing you under conditions X, Y, Z." or the wife says, I want your divorce, but only if X, Y, and Z occurs. This is also, it's considered an invalid get on the level of the Torah. It must also be lishma. It must also be written specifically for that individual. What if a karaite is giving the divorce and it's a mass-produced divorce, a bill of divorce? The whole thing is mass-produced. That's also considered invalid. There are other things that he mentions, but none of these things that, according to our tradition, are from the Torah, are explicit in the text of the Pentateuch. They're not in the Chumash. If you open the Chumash and you open up the book of Devarim, where all the laws of divorce appear, none of these things are in there. And the Karaites only follow that which is explicit in the verse. Right? So you can't tell me that we have this presumption that their gittin are valid on the level of the Torah. And what that means is, according to Rabbi Mitrani, what that means is their bills of divorce carry no weight. Okay. So we're at a crossroads right now. Rabbi Mitrani is firmly of the belief that because they are not experts in how to compose gittin, how to deliver them, what they must be on, and that the witnesses on the get itself are invalid, then they definitely do not have the status of being divorcees on the level of the Torah and on the level of midrabanan, according to the rabbis, or by virtue of decree, rabbinic decree. So that leaves us with category A, marriages. If their divorces are invalid, what about the marriages? Are the marriages also invalid? Or are the marriages considered valid? That's the cross. We are at this crossroad right now. Now, I'm going to skip again a little bit further. Go to the second page. So now, Rabbi Mitrani addresses another problem. This problem is as follows. He says that with regard to, oh, I'm sorry, give me one moment. Oh, okay. So he says that with regard to the Kiddushin, with regard to accepting their marriages, it's not so clear that you can say that they are considered invalid. Because if they're invalid, then they're never married to begin with. They're never divorced to begin with. And so it's basically the equivalent of boyfriend, girlfriend living with each other and then separated. There's never any issue of, God forbid, somebody marrying the married woman and producing mamzerim that no Jew can marry. Right? So if that were the case, the discussion would end here. But Rabbi Mitrani is saying that's not the case. Why is that not the case? The Gemara in Kiddushin, as well as the Gemara in Yevamot, rules in accordance with the opinion of Rabbi Elazar. Rabbi Elazar, what does he hold? Rabbi Elazar's opinion there is with regard to this very discussion, but regarding another group of people, the Kutim. The Kutim are the Samaritans. The Samaritans, I'm sure everyone here is familiar with them, but if not, they're a group of individuals who primarily live in Israel, in Nablus, and once upon a time, they had the status of being quasi-Jews. So Rabbi Elazar, whose opinion is final law according to the back and forth in those two passages in the Talmud, his opinion is that only a Vadai may marry a Vadai. What does that mean? It means anybody who is presumed to have proper pedigree, proper lineage, by virtue of their parents or by virtue of converting, right? They may marry each other. In other words, an observant Jew whose parents were observant may marry an observant Jew whose parents were observant, or a valid convert. The other way around is not exactly so clear. So there are cases the Gemara there talks about, namely, a child who's an asufi, somebody who's taken up from the marketplace, they have no idea whose parents are, or a shtuki, somebody whose mother we know, but we have no idea whose father, who is the father of this individual. So these individuals may not marry everybody. We're not going to go into the discussion of who they may marry, who they may not marry. But the Talmud over there says that the kutim cannot even marry one of these people whose status is doubtful. The kutim, the Samaritans, it was even questionable if they can marry themselves, because, as we'll see in a moment, among them were relationships and children born out of those relationships, which Rabbi Elazar held nobody could marry into. Now, you couldn't necessarily prove if the children or the child that you were going to marry was a product of such a relationship. So all these kutim, all these Samaritans were of doubtful status. If that's the case, there's only one solution. According to Rabbi Elazar, they can only marry converts, because converts to Judaism are not restricted by the restriction against marrying mamzeri. So Rabbi Mitrani says, how do we know that this opinion is codified as halakha? He says, number one, v'chen pasak b'halachot. The Rif, Rabbi Yitzhak Alfasi, one of the greatest of the Rishonim, he codifies this as law. Number two, v'shakil v'tare gemara v'ta'ameh Rabbi Elazar, kevan d'ilchata kavateh. When the Talmud has back and forth deliberation with the holding of a particular rabbi as being assumed as accepted, then we have a rule in halakha that it's assumed that that opinion is the accepted view. Otherwise, why would the Talmud be working with that assumption? Ad de'asik ta'ameh mishum she'en beki'im b'torah kidushin v'gerushin. U'mishum hachi kuti lo yisak kutit. And for that reason, because they don't know what they're doing with regard to marriage or divorce, by standards of halakha, that is, it could be shem echad min habekiim shelo era pisul b'nisuei avotav. It must be that the Samaritans cannot marry one another because it's possible that at some point down the family tree, you did have an individual who knew what they were doing. Perhaps there was a rabbinite there who was a witness. Perhaps they received the proper procedure and protocol and guidance from a rabbi in the marriage, in the marital ceremony. And if that's the case, then they would be considered legally married according to halakha. That poses a very serious problem, of course. That poses a very serious problem, because now you're dealing with a reality where there is a way into the marriage, possibly, but there's no way out. And if there's no way out, then God forbid, if this woman, this Karaite woman, were to remarry, I don't want to say what would be the status of the kids. It wouldn't be good. Now, I'm going to skip a little again. So now we're left with basically our final question. which is, why are we assuming that for the marriage, there's a likelihood that the individual, the Karaite individual who is getting married, may have had a kosher wedding somewhere down the family tree, but the divorces are all invalid? That doesn't seem fair. If we're going to assume that all of their gittin are considered invalid, you should also assume that all of their marriages are invalid. So why are we assuming that there's a possibility, a safek, there is a doubt as to the status of marriages in the family tree, which poses a problem for us, but that all of their divorces are no good? That doesn't, again, Rabbi Mitrani did not yet explain why he's assuming this doubt. So he explains as follows. Actually, before we get there, I'm going to read all of this outside, but basically the inquirer poses other gemarot, other passages from the Talmud, to try to prove that the Karaites are considered 100% trustworthy. One of these cases has to do with a passage in Nida. We touched on this earlier, but the Talmud says, so long as the Karaites follow in the ways of their forefathers, then they emit tuma, ritual impurity, with their blood. Only Jews are able to emit ritual impurity by virtue of their blood. Right? Dam nida, menstrual blood on the level of the Torah is not considered impure by a person who is a non-Jew. So you must assume then that they have the full-fledged status of Jews. And he says, absolutely not. This is not a proof. What does this have to do with anything, he says? He says, Hainu le'inyan tumat, le'inyan tuma, de mitra'ot min ha'chamim, umarot lahem demei lidatam. Says this has to do only insofar as the reality that existed, that they kept the laws of Nida, their women kept the laws of Nida in accordance, if not stricter, than the standards of the rabbinites, of the Chachamim. So as far as their status of blood, that you pick the one exception to the rule, Rabbi so-and-so, that happens to be one of the few things that they keep properly. And in that sense, fine. Because they observe that properly, then we're not worried about declaring their blood as the blood of non-Jews. But if we're talking about their status of being mamzerim, or doubtful mamzerim, possible mamzerim, that has nothing to do with ritual impurity. Because even a person who is a mamzer, if God forbid somebody is born out of incest, or was born to a married woman out of wedlock, they're still Jews. You just can't marry into them. But that doesn't mean they're not Jews. In other words, nobody is claiming that Karaites are not Jewish. That's not the claim here. It's just a matter of, are they possible mamzerim or not? So the rabbi is bringing something out of left field, has nothing to do with this, and Rabbi Mitrani is quick to catch him. Don't try to fool me. Don't try to trick me. This has nothing to do with our discussion. Now, moving a little forward, and again, I apologize for so much skipping, but I would like to just present a taste of this teshuvah while we can, so as to expose ourselves to the method of Rabbi Mitrani's thinking. So now he's quoting from Rabbeinu Nissim. Rabbeinu Nissim was a 14th century famous Rishon, famous rabbi from Gerona, from Spain. And he says as follows. He says, that which you have written citing Rabbeinu Nissim, you're not allowed to reveal if a family has problems in their pedigree, in the lineage. If it's not known to the public, you're not allowed to disclose that to the public. That has to do with families who require revelation. So for example, if a wife cheated on her husband and the child born to that family is really the child of another man, that has to be something that, you know, is to be brought up in the case of a marriage, in the case of a boy one day or a girl one day marrying this child down the line. But to publicize it openly, you're not allowed to do that. Now, Rabbi Mitrani says that has to do with cases like that. She'af Eliyahu lo yigale otan, where Eliyahu Hanavi, even the Talmud in Kiddushin says, even Eliyahu Hanavi in the future will not reveal these secrets. Aval elu, but these Karaites, enan serichim gidui, nobody needs to reveal anything about them. The megulim ve'omdim hem mikama dorot, they themselves present to the whole world for a number of generations now. Shinivdelu me'adat Israel, that they separated themselves from the Jewish people. Ve'en edehem besad istan, and their witnesses are not, this is a borrowed phrase also from the Talmud, their witnesses are not of the north, literally. What that means is their witnesses are not far. You don't need to bring me a far, far away witness to prove this point. Everybody knows this. It's common knowledge. They have the presumed status of being invalid. Bring me one of their own witnesses, and they'll admit this themselves. You don't need to try to defend them when they themselves will admit that their marital and divorce practices contain the problems that we just mentioned. So up until this point, Rabbi Mitrani had demonstrated, number one, their divorces are nothing. Number two, their marriages could possibly be something. Why? Because the marriages don't contain, and this is in part from the area that we skipped, but he says that their marriages, the process of kiddushin, the process of marriage, is not as intricate and detailed as are the procedures and protocol that are required for writing a get, the bill of divorce. In fact, it's quite simple. It's quite easy. If a person were to deliver an object of minimal monetary value, a shaveh peruta, we're talking in today's currency, maybe 10 cents in US currency, not even. In the presence of two valid witnesses, two observant Jews, and he declares to betroth or to designate this woman as his wife, then that's it, finished. The Talmud even gives cases where you can even be more vague than that, and it's still considered a valid marriage. So their marriages don't require specific language, a specific text, conditions, no conditions. It's a lot more simple to get married than it is to divorce. For that reason, and by the way, that goes back to the point Rabbi Mitrani brought regarding the Samaritans. That's why the Rabbi Elazar's opinion in the Talmud that we cited earlier states that Samaritans can't even marry other Samaritans. Because we are concerned that they may have slipped up, they may have had Rabbinites witness the marriage, whereas the divorces are certainly not done in accordance with halacha. That leaves us with a very serious dilemma again, which is that of mamzerut. They're married, and if they separate, there's no way out according to their standards, and they therefore fall under the category of safek mamzerim, doubtful or possible mamzerim. We arrive at our final portion. This is the final portion of the Teshuvah that we'll be covering today, and I'll end off with this. Rabbi Mitrani says, Ve'im ken, concluding, Leit kan kiddushin ve'la gerushin. There is no marriage here on the level of the Torah, and there's certainly no status of divorce. El kulhu havu noladim biznut, beleka behu pisul mamzerut. So if he's quoting the inquirer's argument. They should all have the status of being boyfriend, girlfriend, and none of them would be mamzerim. He says leta. This is null. This is an invalid argument. Deha amran le'el, for we said earlier, dehashinan di Israel itrame b'kiddushin. We're worried that Jews may have been involved in the marriage, or haverim shebenehem, or alternatively, the rabbinite sympathizers, those who observed Jewish law, they followed halakha, but may have been karaites themselves. And if that's the case, then they are married on the level of the Torah, at least. Right? Because as we said earlier, the Karaites, the Sadducees, often feared, they often showed reverence towards the Rabbinites in certain matters of halakha. As that passage in Masechet Nida proves regarding a particular Kohen Gadol, there's a story there of a Kohen Gadol who was talking to a Sadduki, a Pharisee, a Karaite, a Sadducee, and this Sadduki spit on him. Now, Kohen Gadol service is obviously invalid if spit, saliva, which transmits tuma, impurity, contacts him. If it contacts him, he can't serve as Kohen Gadol. So the Talmud says, Hurku panav, his face became green when this happened. He freaked out. He went to this guy's wife and he asked him, I need to know, how do you practice your Tarat HaMishpacha, laws of Nida? And she said, no, we go to the rabbis for everything. We follow the proper halakha when it comes to this. I'm in my state of tahara. Don't worry, my husband is pure. He's good. You're fine. You're not impure, Mr. Kohen Gadol. So from here, we see that they did care when it comes to certain areas of halakha, particularly with regard to the relationship in taharat hamishpacha. And he goes on further and says, even if you want to say that it's possible that the marriage was done in the presence of kosher witnesses on the level of the Torah, they're not experts. This is the punchline. They're not experts in the validity of divorce at all, period. Neither are most halachic Jews, by the way. Adkan, this is the conclusion of Rabbi Mitrani. At the end of this teshubah, look at the humility. Look at his humility. He says, "Behatarti bekirot hagmara." I straddled and diligently searched within the walls of the Talmud. Ad mekom sheyadi magat limsol lahem heter bekasra yadi me'asi. I tried to find a heter to marry them, because they're still Jews. But I couldn't. I couldn't prove it. Any argument this rabbi brought, I instantly found a flaw in it. V'shamati sheharav hagadol. But I heard, notice he didn't say I learned or I saw this directly. He says, I heard in passing that the great rabbi, Kavod Morenu, Yaakov Berab, his teacher, his chacham, Morel Lahatir, he ruled it's permitted to marry them. And his mind is far expansive in the jurisprudence of the Gemara, in Talmudic study. He found for them arguments to prove that they may be proper marriage material, that they are ksherim, you can marry into them. Ma shelo masati ani bekisur. What I was not able to find in short. By the way, this is not a short teshuvah. For those who are following along, I have 3 full PDFs in very teeny tiny Rashi script that if I were to go and analyze in full, would take me over 3 hours. And Rabbi Mitrani calls this a short teshuvah. What's the takeaway here? What's the lesson? Why is this practical and relevant to us? We're not marrying Karaites nowadays. Well, not most of us, at least. This is relevant because of what occurs nowadays, particularly in the United States, with regard to assimilation. I'm not talking about assimilation in the very tragic sense where Jews marry, chas v'shalom, God forbid, if they marry non-Jews. I'm talking about factions such as the conservative and the reform movement with no ill intent. This is just a matter of halakha. Their standards do not align with the standards of Chachamim with regard to marriage and divorce. What to do about that? Can you marry into the Reform community? Can you marry in but it would appear at first glance, it matches the reality of the Reform and Conservative Jews nowadays. Both groups of Jews reject the Torah Sheba'al Peh. They don't accept the legal tradition of the Chachamim. They both, from time to time, have a kosher witness during the marriage. Most of them, not all of them, but most of them, do not follow the guidelines of our Chachamim with regard to divorce. So what do you do then with regard to children who cannot prove their lineage, their background? If you can prove at least a chazakah of three generations that that a particular family never had any divorce, never had any mamzerut or anything of that kind within the family tree, then this is not a discussion. If you can prove it, you could prove it. But that's not exactly provable. After a certain amount of generations passes, the original chazakah, the original presumption is that the marriages where there are no records available, 6, 7, 8 generations back, the presumption then becomes that they aren't valid. So I'm not here to, like I said, I'm not here to give pesach halacha, but it's an interesting issue because this issue of valid candidates for marriages among Jews seems to have died off in the 16th century. And we see that's not the case. Many rabbis, many chachamim are now looking back at this teshubah and at other teshubot to see how to address our relationships with Reform and Conservative Jews. Be'ezrat Hashem, I pray that we no longer encounter and that we should cease to encounter all these matters of doubt, and that the lineage and family trees of Am Yisrael should continue to maintain their purity and their proper pedigree for generations to come. Sorry if this took a little longer than expected, but I'm happy to take questions at this point. There are any questions?
Recording.